What is going on, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. Today we are talking to a graphic and web designer named Shay. Now, I'm really excited about this interview. Shay and I actually have this funny connection from back a long time ago when I first started designing. I bought one of her themes. I saw some of her work and really liked it. And then as I was interviewing Jared and all that aftermath, I discovered that she is also working with the Bible for Normal People, my friends over at that podcast. And so I thought, how cool would it be to bring in a designer, somebody who freelances, and that's what I have for you today. Shay's story is absolutely incredible. She gets into so many intricate parts of her story and just some of the trauma and hurt and how that has been used by God to do what she does, her work, and how it shaped her. It's a fascinating story. It's amazing. We also get into Enneagram. So for you Enneagram nerds, she totally is into Enneagram, has thought a lot about it. She's an Enneagram 4, so we talk a lot about that. There's so many good nuggets in this episode, such good stuff. I think you're really going to enjoy hearing from her. So if you can, go ahead right now, share this episode on your social media just so more people know about the Theology of Hustle and what we got going on here. I would also ask, if you have a second, just pick up your phone and leave me a rating or a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to your podcast. It just shows people, hey, people actually listen to this thing, and it's not weird to listen to. It's actually worthwhile. So if you don't mind doing that, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much for all your support. I hope you're really enjoying what we got going on. I cannot wait for you to hear from Shay. Leave me comments on social media. Let me know what you think. Let's get the conversation going about all this stuff. So without further ado, here is my episode with Shay. Hi Shay, welcome to the podcast. So why don't we jump off and just have you tell your story?
All right, awesome. Well, my working history started kind of on the young side. I was a teenager around the time of Columbine, and I think many of us probably remember that big national news school shooting. And I can remember being deeply affected by what I imagined was like this deep sadness of the shooters that they must have felt in order to have the capacity to commit that kind of violence. And so an after school group started at our middle school, and my best friend and I, Emily, joined that, and we really became immersed in this cause for advocacy and nonviolence. And that is what really grew into my first actual job. So I worked for a national nonviolence organization as a program facilitator. So I was running after school groups for kids and teens, but we also traveled the country to speak to youth and adults about gun violence, the research and the legislation. And we also frequently met with politicians to discuss that kind of legislation. And we served on a national youth council. And I think that that is what kind of really opened up the world to me. And it gave me this global perspective, which I'm very thankful for today, because we got to do things like we facilitated think tanks with refugee teens, and we collaborated on best practice guidance for marginalized youth. And I think that out of everything I've ever done professionally, that's probably this first job as a teenager had the most impact on me and how my life would be shaped going forward. I'm very thankful for that. And I think it really taught me the importance of giving other people a voice, kind of out of my white suburban, you know, neighborhood home, and kind of going out and meeting different kinds of people. And I think that that's really manifested itself into what I do now, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit. But I'll fast forward a bit and skip over quite a bit, but I will tell you that I had a bit of an identity crisis in college and ended up dropping out despite doing really well academically. But then I got married, and my high school sweetheart, that's who I got married to at the time, and we wound up at Fort Hood, Texas, because he was an infantryman in the Army. And the job market out there was absolutely awful, because there were all these spouses looking for jobs, and there was real no industry there other than military. So it was just awful. I couldn't find anything that I really enjoyed doing. So when I had my oldest son, I decided to stay home with him at that time. But I've always been this like really curious creature, and I never really sat still for very long. So when he was 3 days old, I was up late at night feeding him, and I decided like right then and there that I was going to learn how to design graphics and code MySpace layouts for military spouses. So that was when MySpace was really still popular. And like military spouses would use this, like either MySpace or Facebook, as a way to keep up with our families for one, and then like a way to like outlandishly profess our love for our soldiers. And so, and it really helped people feel, mostly the wives, feel close to their spouses while they were away. So in a way it kept my hands busy creatively, but it also helped kind of, I would say, heal some hearts that were kind of breaking from separation, including my own. And these small expressions of love helped hold us, some of us, together. So that was kind of the catalyst that kind of jumpstarts me being a designer today. My husband deployed when our son was 2 months old. And during that time, for some reason, I decided to stay thousands of miles away from family. And I kept myself busy in Texas by running an infant-only Army-certified daycare center. So totally different from what anything else I had ever done. But I basically had 4 infants at my home at any given time because, you know, military, they work around the clock, and that meant so did I. But in my free time and when the babies were sleeping, I would continue designing and just building my coding skills. So I just kept my hands busy is what I was doing. And it wasn't long before the same spouses that were buying graphics from me for MySpace were then starting their own online businesses, either blogging or Etsy or something along those lines. And then they started coming to me to help with the design for that. And so simply just in response to the opportunity that they presented to me, I started learning how to code WordPress themes and learned some theories and skills related to branding and marketing. And for any of your listeners who don't know what a WordPress theme is or what WordPress is, it's a bit of open source software that it now runs a significant portion of the web, actually. And a theme is the thing that gives a website its form and design. And so it's really what controls the user experience or the interface of a site. So when you go to a site, how it looks is controlled by the theme. So this, for a few years, served as a perfect part-time job and creative outlet for me. But I didn't realize then at the time that how important it would be for me in the future, like this kind of like thing I was dabbling in, it ended up being something really big for me later on. So I'll spare you guys the details, but in 2012, I went through a divorce when my husband started really struggling with PTSD and what one therapist called combat-induced bipolar disorder. And during that time, I would say my faith and my assumptions about marriage and following God's plan, they were really challenged. But in the end, I found myself asking my husband to leave when it became dangerous for my children. And I only tell you this because this is the prime reason why I went full time in my business, because I really had to. I didn't really have a choice. Like all of a sudden, I was a single mom with 2 kids. I was actually pregnant, so I had 1 on the way. And I knew that whatever I did to provide for them, it had to really line up with who I was. And like, I couldn't go get another office job. I couldn't see working at McDonald's, you know, I couldn't do anything else other than something that I already felt really connected to. So I went with my gut and I just started taking on more design clients, which ended up working out pretty well. Now, another important part of my story is that around the same time, in fact, 2 weeks before I asked my husband to leave, I walked into this new church community that a friend told me about. And it was after visiting many, many churches that I just never really felt like I fit in with. But this church was quite different. For one, they had just a small handful of families and they met in a gym at the YMCA. And the first week I was there, one of the guys was preaching about Gehenna being the trash heap in Jerusalem. And it was like this analytical, like intellectually based take on scripture, and or at least more than I had ever experienced before. And I was instantly connected and thought, these are my people. And so without really even knowing all of the details of the drama playing out at home, these people totally embraced me and my children. we started getting invited to weekly shared meals. We celebrated holidays with them. They threw me a baby shower. They showed up with meals and did my dishes after I gave birth. They would show up and like whisk my kids away so I could sleep with the baby. They just really care deeply for us without ever judging me for my divorce or making me feel like I didn't belong. And I will say that as I was reading just the other week about the early Christians in this church, this community of people really modeled what they were doing as a community in a way that went back to the roots of Christianity. And like those early first Christians, they were mistaken by the Romans for being a sex cult because they just loved each other so much and were like outpouring love on one another that it was like weird to the Romans.
Yeah, yeah.
So this community was in a way a lot like that. We're just always doing stuff together, always spending time together. It wasn't like just a Sunday morning kind of thing. And I know you'll get this because you're into the Enneagram, but what they were doing for me was this clear manifestation of a two helper energy. Yeah. And I think that in a lot of ways, one of the women in our church is a two, and she like organized people into being that two, you know, for everyone else. And these people could anticipate my needs and were there to help me in so many ways those first few years after divorce and still to this day. And that's an iconic quality of Jesus. And I was absolutely meeting Jesus through those people who were my friends. And I really needed that. And I think God really knew I needed that at the time. Mm-hmm. But I'll reveal here that I'm a four on the Enneagram. And one of our special gifts is that we recognize what's present in others that's not present in us. And sometimes people think that's like a negative thing, but it's really not. It's just something like we notice, you know? So we end up spending significant amount of time wondering why other people have this one quality when we don't. And so that's exactly what I did. I wondered why I couldn't anticipate other people's needs and help them in ways, those same ways that my friends helped me. And so it turns out that just wasn't my work to do. But I don't think it's a coincidence that at the same time that this community of believers was pouring their energy into me, I was then able to somehow filter that and turn it around and really pour it into something that I was building online. So I, by this point, had worked with food bloggers on every continent, all seven continents, and was just kind of growing and working with really cool people, to be honest. And through my work with those clients, another opportunity landed in my lap, as many have, but I couldn't possibly tell you all of them. But this one is significant because all of a sudden, all these food bloggers were coming to me, and I'm launching new sites for some great food bloggers. And then other newer, smaller bloggers were then emailing me asking if I had something pre-made that they could just sell or that they could buy and that I would sell, that they could buy. And it would help them get online quickly and inexpensively without having to hire me. And at first I resisted this. I wasn't a developer by trade. I was just a designer who knew how to code, and there's a difference.
There is a big difference.
Yes. Yes. And I definitely had a big case of imposter syndrome here when they were asking me for something that I didn't really feel like I could provide them. But finally I gave in, and I took my starter theme that I just used to start all of my client projects, and I sent it to an actual developer to have it audited. And he cleaned up a couple of things, and then we ended up launching it as a product called Foodie Pro. And the success of that product totally exceeded my wildest expectations because, I mean, I was just kind of responding to what people were asking for. It's not something I ever intended to do or intentionally thought, oh, I'm going to launch this product. But within a few months, the theme had been picked up by a pretty large theme market. And within 1 month of that, it became the number one selling theme in that market.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was
awesome.
Pretty cool.
That's awesome.
I was kind of blowing my mind. Like, I had to have other people check the information and be like, is this really real or am I like imagining it?
Right, right.
And it's really stayed in that position, give or take a month here or there, for nearly 5 years. And it's still going strong, which hasn't happened with any other theme out there.
That's cool.
And this one theme actually turned into a whole company of themes. And I would say that a few years ago, there was this huge influx of food bloggers coming online. And And you have some experience with that as
yes, well. Yeah.
With food blogging. Right. And I would say that it's themes like Foodie Pro that made it easier for people to get online because they didn't have to worry about going and hiring somebody to do it. They just install WordPress, install Foodie Pro, and all of a sudden you're blogging. So I would say that in the world of blogging, it can be pretty chaotic, but something like a theme kind of turns that chaos and orders it, right? It orders it for you.
Yeah.
And it was through this kind of work that I really discovered what was mine to do, you know, when I didn't really understand before, but this kind of process led me through that.
That's so cool. I love it. No, that's cool. And I think it's important that we tell everybody that I actually was a Foodie Pro user before.
Awesome.
Like we met like a month ago. I guess it must have been 4 or 5 years ago I found your theme. Is that possible?
Yeah.
And
probably right when it came out then. Yeah.
Yeah. So my wife JJ had a food blog. I had another theme and went looking for a better theme, and yours was like the one that everybody said to go to, like across the internet. So I actually literally remember like seeing your name over and over again as I bought the theme, because it is Shay Box, right? I mean, it's kind of a unique name. And so when I saw you on, you know, the Bible for Normal People stuff, I was like, this cannot be. It's pretty cool though how the internet does all that stuff, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think I said this to you when you reached out to me, but just the degrees of connection we have online is amazing, because actually, since I've started working with the Bible for Normal People, I've met other people as well who are like, I'm a food blogger. I've used your theme. And I'm like, that's so amazing. Like, how connected are we in the world that that's even possible? You know? Like,
yeah, totally. That is mind boggling. Can you, I know, so you do a lot of freelance work and you design, do you still design themes now, or was Foodie Pro kind of,
yeah, well, we ended up releasing a few more themes after Foodie Pro that also did pretty well, but just not to the same level.
Okay.
But I actually, that company that formed for themes was Feast, and I actually ended up handing it over to new hands last year. And so I've kind of stepped out of that role, which is good because now I get a chance to really go deeper with my clients. So I do still create themes for people, but it's part of a much bigger kind of strategy with branding and just online marketing and stuff like that.
Okay. Awesome. So people, I don't know that people understand maybe what a designer does, right? Like you always hear about, oh, I'm a graphic designer. I design. Can you just talk about what your job is? Like, what do you do for most people when you take them on as a client?
So most of the clients I take on, I always start them with branding, because before you can kind of do anything else, you have to know what your branding is. And branding isn't just a logo. Sometimes it gets confused with that, but it's not just a logo. It's not just the colors or the fonts that you use or anything like that. I like to say that, and I stole this from somewhere else that I can't even remember where, but it just is so perfect that I use it. But branding is the heart of your business or your personal brand made visual. And so when I work with my clients, I first start really digging deep to see them and for me to see God through them. And it's the heart of who they are and the gifts and the messages they bring to the world. And then my job is really easy, I think, because then I'm just translating that core truth of who they are into something that's visual. So we always start with branding, because this is the theology of hustle. So I'll go ahead and say this here.
I love it.
Where else? But, you know, I believe that words need flesh. And so ideas mm-hmm. need flesh. And this to me means that things on the soul level need to be translated into a language that others can understand.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
That's good.
So my understanding of this principle actually comes from the incarnation of Jesus. So during scripture, we see this idea of the word or the holy wisdom or God's self-revelation becoming human in order to speak in a language that humans can understand. Some part of me wants to see that we as designers actually we're acting and partnering with God to translate ideas and things on the soul level into a material visual medium that others can understand. So it always starts with the branding. And then from there, we go out to website or products or even how to arrange your services online. So like if there's a service provider, we actually craft the packages that people can buy from them and how, you know, the wayfinding of the process of how people walk through that process with them. So it's kind of a little bit about.
No, that's cool. That's fascinating to me. I love how you're bringing in the theology bonus points for that, for sure. Like the incarnation and stuff.
Yeah.
But it occurs to me that you're almost counseling somebody through knowing themselves well enough to actually brand it, right?
Absolutely. Because you have to get clear on who you are. And in a business setting, not only who you are, but who you're speaking to as well and knowing their story. Because that's, you know, it takes equal amounts of both in order to get your true brand, because your brand doesn't just include you, it includes the people you're talking to. So yes, there's a huge piece of what I do that's just like getting clear about people. And I wouldn't say counseling, like I'm not.
Yeah. Sure. I toss that term around too loosely. I apologize about that. But yeah, like helping somebody know themselves. Yeah, right.
Exactly. Yeah. And I had an online course about this very thing a few years ago online. And it takes people through the process of like figuring out what their intentions are, what this core truth is. And I actually had someone email me and say, thank you so much for that course, because I went through that and figured out that this actually isn't what I need to be doing. And I'm going to go do something else. And like,
wow,
that was actually, I was like, yeah, go girl, you know, do it. It lines up with who you are. So,
yeah, that's so cool. So how do you walk somebody through that process? I guess, is that simple enough question to get into, or is that too big?
I mean, we use a ton of just questions that probe people. I have this list of reasons why people connect with brands, and I'll take each of my clients and say, okay, which of these actually line up with who you are or where you're going with this? And they'll check them off and say, we'll have 10. And then I'll go, okay, well, we need to narrow that down to 5. So narrow it down. So it's this process of kind of opening up with just throw everything at me. And then we kind of narrow it down till we get this really specific view of who they are and where they're going.
Wow. That's cool. That seems like a pretty intensive process there, right?
I think it is. A lot of what I do, I do strategy calls with people, but a lot of times I'll just give them these questions in a worksheet and have them fill it out. And they have to go back, and sometimes it takes people like days or a couple weeks to kind of go through this. And someone just recently was like, those questions were really hard, and sometimes they can't answer everything. And I'm like, that's okay, because the point is to kind of mix up your assumptions about what you need or where you're going with your brand in order to kind of get you to rebuild that in this process of discovery right at the beginning.
Yeah, there's a lot of consulting that goes with all that on top of just like actually making things look pretty, right?
Absolutely.
That's so cool. Okay, so I love hearing about design. I could nerd out with you about design, I think, all day. So I might have to call you later. But I find your story so fascinating, and I've never heard somebody talk about being cared for by twos and not understanding that they can't care for others in the same way. And that's how you sort of came to understand you being a four. Can you talk a little bit about being a four and what that even means in your mind?
Sure. Well, I know you're a three.
Yes.
All right. So originally I thought I was a three. Mostly because I took a test that told me that. And
yes,
I know now that the test is just kind of a starting point, and you can't really 100% trust the results of that.
right.
Kind of dig into it yourself. Yeah. But I did spend a couple of years thinking that I was a three. And so that's what I was reading and studying. And I knew that I had a four wing because I could see like the more creative side of things, or just seeing like noticing beauty in the world. That's very characteristic of a four. Which a designer mostly used.
Right.
But I did not identify with like the more depressed side of a four, because usually fours are like the most depressed. But
yeah, you get that melancholy. People talk about sort of that melancholy four, right? That's what everybody, that's what I think of immediately in my mind, I guess.
Yeah. And I didn't see myself that way. I didn't see myself as self-involved or anything. Other people may see that, but I didn't see myself that way. But now that I do understand it as melancholy, I can go back and say, oh yeah, I do identify with that. It's not necessarily a bad depressed thing, but there is this kind of beauty and sadness, if that makes sense.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And so I definitely identify with that. So it was, but it was actually through listening to the Typology podcast and going through the Enneagram course that the liturgist had that all of a sudden I was like, whoa, I'm definitely a four, like 100%. Everything they've described as a four, that's me. And even to the point where I think on the Typology podcast, one of the guests on there said, a successful four, there's nothing worse than a successful four because there's like this agony and pain about it. Because when you have success as a four, all of a sudden you feel like other people are wanting you to recreate that same exact thing that became successful. And you can't do that as a four because everything
that's
to you.
Awesome. Wow. Wow.
It's new and like it's born out of like your insides, like your guts are spilling out and everything you create. So you can't recreate something just because it was a success.
That's crazy. You know what? I've actually heard them say that there's nothing more sad than a three who's a failure.
Right.
Because right. Everything like your love is measured in how much success you have, how much people think that you've accomplished things, right? It's funny that they're right there in like opposites in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's but playing on each other in a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Right, right.
Like the three with the four with the three wing. I mean, that's an interesting like non-dual dynamic to be in.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Huh. I love it. I love it. Okay, so what does it mean to... I loved how you described seeing things in other people. And that's because the four sees that there's some, or does a four see that there's something missing in themselves? Is that what gives them that ability?
Right. So our, like sin or virtue or vice or whatever it is, however you want to describe it, is envy. But it's not like, oh, my friend has a nice house, so I want their nice house. It's more like we see qualities of people that we're like, I don't have that, you know? Hmm. Like, why and how could I start doing that? But then there's this frustration of, well, I can't because that's not who I am. You know, like this, when I could see my friends, you know, taking care of me in my story, that's very two energy and I could see that. And you could describe it as envy. Like I wanted that because I wanted to be able to care for other people and show Jesus to other people the same way that they showed it to me. But I had to really break down that idea in order to see, well, that's not the way I'm going to do it. And that's just because of who I am and how I'm going to filter that energy into the world. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. That's fascinating. So I have to ask the question, though. How did you feel when Foodie Pro blew up then?
Well, yeah. So like I said earlier, I had to like ask people to look at the reports with me and be like, am I imagining this? Because I couldn't believe it myself at first. And then when the success of it continued and continued and continued, obviously it was a great thing. And I ended up using that as a catalyst personally to kind of grow in other areas because I could kind of step back away from working so much and kind of focus on other things. But then that whole idea of, you know, there's nothing worse than a successful four was that people were going, oh, when are you going to put out your next theme? And for, I think, 2 years after I put out Foodie, I did not create another theme at all. I wouldn't do it because... like Foodie to me came out of a time where like I was intensely suffering at home, you know, going through a divorce, caring for three children on my own. And like, I felt like that was born out of that. And it seems ridiculous because it's just a piece of software and it's like the most minimalist theme you could ever find.
That's what's beautiful about it. It's so, yeah. Yeah. I love that about it.
Thank you. But like, I couldn't see myself recreating that at all. And there was a lot of anguish about that. And I think why, you know, after a while, I had to kind of separate myself from that company and say, okay, I've done what I'm going to do here. I have to go build something else somewhere else. So that's how it happened.
That is, yeah, that is so crazy. I mean, it's so interesting that like it came out of that period. I find that very fascinating. Yeah. Such a four thing, right? Is that a very four thing to like feel?
I think it is, but I think there's also like when I read scripture or in my experience of the divine, I feel like there's some kind of divine pattern to that, you know? Mm-hmm. We move to like a new level in our understanding of the world when our world, basically all of our assumptions are destroyed and we have to rethink about our worldview and how we understand things. And to me, that was that period of, you know, things were kind of coming out from underneath me. Everything I thought about how the world worked wasn't true. And for some reason, I had this grace. And instead of rejecting the divine in my life, for some reason, I was able to say, okay, this is a gift to me. And I'm going to flip this around and understand God and the world in a new way. And out of that came this like determination to create something. And that's where it came from.
Yeah, I think I really resonate with that because it is those seasons that God really uses to refine and like build us up, oddly, right? Like kind of break us down and then build us up even stronger. So I appreciate you being willing to share your story with us too. I think that's it's powerful. So
absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, let's talk creativity and God. I know you have so many thoughts on this. As a designer, where do you see all that sort of playing out in your vocation?
Well, I think that, I don't know if this could be like a chicken and egg kind of deal, but I feel like because I, as a designer, seek inspiration everywhere, then I'm somehow figured out how to seek God everywhere as well. Or maybe it's that I seek God everywhere and therefore I have inspiration from everywhere. I'm not really sure, but I can tell you that like as designers, we learn to trust the process, and that's really cliche sounding, but it's cliche because it's true. Because like, you know, I'm not going to get a new project request in today, throw the first thing that comes together, you know, in the Photoshop and then send it to him and then I'm done.
Right.
No, I give myself assignments and I go through this process of going from their need to the final product. And along those lines, I feel like in my experience that inspiration hits me all over the place. So, and I'll give you an example in one particular way this makes sense to me is that like, okay, so the story of Genesis, of the creation of the world. In Genesis 1:2, we hear that the spirit, you know, the world is formless and void and the spirit just kind of hovers over the water. Well, I don't know why, but that to me stands out to me, maybe because of spirit. And I'm really into the idea of spirit and like the feminine energy of spirit. But I've noticed that it hovers. Well, why does it hover? Well, God was pausing in this story before he created anything. So he took this pause. So when I start a project, I always pause. I don't jump right into it. I, you know, take in my client's need, who they are, their worksheet answers. And then I pause and I just kind of sit with it. And all the time, like a designer doesn't clock in and clock out because our minds are working all the time. So I could be, you know, picking my kids up from school, or I could be browsing Pinterest, or, you know, walking through the park, or whatever it is. And something will hit me and go, oh, this makes sense for that client. And then once that happens a few times, it's like these little fireworks going off. And then I'm like, oh, can't wait to get home. And then I'm like, pulling out my computer and I got to do this, kids, like go watch a movie or something, you know, like I've got to get this done now, because if I don't get it out of me, I feel like I'm going to explode. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's inspiration. And I do think it comes from the divine. For me, that's like a really powerful way with how I interact with the Holy Spirit. And, you know, in that way, and along with, I do feel like the Spirit is guiding me in business decisions and pulling me along. And a lot of times it's when I think about something that's either worked out, that's worked out well, actually, or sometimes not well, I guess, but mostly well, I think, oh, that wasn't even my decision. I just kind of like went along with how things were, you know? And to me, that's the Holy Spirit and totally inspiration. It's the Spirit, you know, coming into me in some way and guiding me. And I will tell you that I don't come from a charismatic background or anything. So I, a long time, didn't really understand what this was and didn't have language or kind of an understanding of how the Spirit works or anything like the gift of the Paraclete or anything. That's all new to me. So I feel like I can maybe only understand those principles now because of the experience I've been through and really getting it. I don't know.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I love how you described it because it's not, I feel like the Spirit, we always put in this sort of, this box over on the side. And like when we need to hear from the Spirit, then we, open this box and allow the Spirit to move. But in your life, the Spirit is always present, right? And you're always sort of like in this dance with the Spirit or something.
I love the way you put that. Yes.
Well, and I put it that way because I very much resonate with that, in my design work, but also in sermons. I'll take a topic, right? And I just mull over it and it just rolls around in my head. And then all of a sudden it's like, boom, you know, it just all comes together at the same time. And it's like, there's nothing more fun than that moment, right?
Yeah. Well, and it, I will say too, there's this, big, productivity principle that's, you know, I read about it a couple of years, but I'm pretty sure it's still really big, you know, the principle of flow and when you're working and how, you know, most people, they're like clock in at 9 a.m. and clock out at 5 p.m. Well, most people are really successful. People have figured out that if they limit the amount of time they have to work on something, their brains are kind of unconsciously working on it behind the scenes. And then when they actually sit down to work on it, like they blow through it and they're not distracted by other stuff. It's kind of a really unsophisticated way of explaining flow. But
that's super interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. That. So a lot of, you know, especially like online entrepreneurs and stuff like that are really into this idea of flow. And for me, like when you're talking about, you know, building a sermon, it just kind of all comes to you all at once, right? And you knock it out and you're like, this is it. This is the whole thing. And so that's a flow. Something's flowing into you, right? Mm-hmm. And flowing out of you. So
that's so cool. Yeah. I love, yes, very much so. That's good stuff. Can you talk a little bit, your opinions on your favorite things to design? Like what like kind of gives you life, and do you have stuff like that? I was going to ask you your favorite design that you've ever done, like your favorite piece of work, but I also don't want to be offensive to some of your clients, you know, where you're like,
no, well, I would tell you that I've been asked this before and it's really hard to come up with an answer because my favorite thing is the thing I just designed. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, 2 weeks, then I'm like, oh, that's awful. You know? And it, you know, I don't know.
Yes. No, that is a little too close to home, actually. That I've redesigned our church website like 4 or 5 times by now, you know, just because you look at it and you're like, that could be so much better. Right. But there's nothing like sort of finishing a project and being proud of it. I like go back and I'll look at it like over and over again, you know, like it'll pop into my mind. I look at it and I'm like, you know, the week of, right. It's like, man, that's really cool. You know? And then after a few weeks, it's not cool anymore, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know what that is. What's wrong with us?
Formed, and you're like, you're a whole new person a few weeks later. So
right.
Cody is different. That's the way I feel about it anyway. I don't know.
That's interesting. Well, because I mean, because you being a graphic designer, like freelancing design, I don't know if people understand how much of a true hustle that is, right? I mean, getting clients and keeping them happy and turning times over, right? I mean, how have you figured out sort of a flow to that? And now I'm just asking you stuff as a designer instead of a podcast host.
And that's super interesting to me, actually, because that is a huge struggle, especially for freelancers or agency owners. These are things that we have to think about. We can't just think about the design. We have to think about the whole process. We have to be a salesperson. We have to, you know, be a customer service representative, a project manager. You have to be all of those things unless you have a team of people doing that for you, which I do not. And I'm sure I don't think you do either.
I do not. Definitely not. Definitely not. So how have you worked that out? Because I feel like maybe a lot of designers fail because not because they're bad at design, but they're bad at the other side of that, right? The business side of like keeping things rolling. So how do you, how have you come up with ways to do that?
Well, for me, I'll be honest, it was a lot of trial and error. But a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I really settled on a process that worked for me. And it's quite different maybe from what people would expect from a freelancer, or what, you know, someone who works for themselves, because you would think, oh, we're freelancing, we're out there, we're willing to take anything that comes our way. And, you know, we'll hop on a call with somebody just to see if we can, you know, get their project. And for me, that's not the case. I had to really hone in on the process. Okay, how do I determine who I work with and who I don't work with? Like, I'm not going to work with someone who's, you know, completely antithetical to things I believe in. You know, I wouldn't like work with the hate group or, you know, something like that.
Sure.
And like, how do I really attract the people that I feel like I have to, I want to work with, because I feel like I'm helping them start a new chapter in their life. Yeah. In a lot of ways. Cause what, you know, as designers, what we're doing is we're helping people move along in their own journey. And so I had to really hone in on, okay, who are these people? What do they call themselves? How, you know, how do I craft my own message to reach them? And then how do I set up a process that also works for them as well as working for me? So like, I don't take phone calls. If I have a strategy, a session with somebody, they have signed up and paid for it. So I'm not wasting a lot of my time talking to people who are never going to hire me, or who are just looking to pick my brain, or who aren't ready to make the commitment to work on something. Cause I want to work with people who are like in the midst of what they're doing and they're ready to move forward. So yeah, I think it's really about like designing your own process. Like if you're using your design principles in order to design this process that people go through. If that makes sense.
That makes total sense, because I know when you're young in design, right, when you first start out, I'm sure there's a lot of just taking whatever comes, right? You just like hustling and making money, right? But as you move along and you refine that process, you can be a lot pickier about who you take on and what sort of projects, and like you said, not wasting your time, because people, I'm sure, always want sort of a free assessment or helpful hints or something, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's cool. No, I think that's really helpful, because I think there's a lot of young designers out there that are struggling sort of getting going, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I will say, though, that there is, I don't think there's anything wrong with taking on work, especially if you're just getting going, taking on work that either doesn't really pay very well, or you're doing for free for some, especially if you are, if there's a reason why you connect with that, like a nonprofit or something. But only if, and this was my rule for this, cause I do take on 2 free projects a year. So, but these are my rules for myself, is that I have complete creative control over what I'm doing, and I use it in my portfolio to attract other people just like them. Because I want to work with those kind of like heart-driven kind of companies. So, you know, that I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that, especially in the beginning.
Wow. Thanks. That's actually really helpful, especially the first one, because you can get into those things and then all of a sudden everybody has opinions on what looks good.
Right.
And
right.
You're like, I'm pretty sure you hired me to design this, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I found that it's interesting, because the people who do, sometimes when you take on a free project or a low paying project, they have so much input about everything and they want to micromanage everything. And then you have people who are paying like high dollar for something, and they're paying high dollar because they trust you and what you're doing, and they'll have like no input whatsoever. And they're like, yep, that looks good. Let's go with it. You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's a big difference. And, you know, a lot of times it's not just about the money, but it's about the type of client you're taking on. If they're willing to spend the money, then they're willing to trust you and what you do.
Yes. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate you delving into the nuts and bolts of all that stuff, because I really do think people listening might struggle with a lot of those things that you struggled with, especially early on in your design career. So
yeah.
All right. So, well, I don't want to waste any more of your time because I know you've got, you know, lots going on and kids to pick up, I'm
sure. This has been fun to talk
about.
Yeah. I don't get to talk about this kind of stuff with people. So it's been fun.
I've definitely enjoyed talking with you as well. And just kind of, yeah, just getting to see what you're doing and just the heart behind your design. I love that it's so genuine. And yeah, I really appreciate that. So let's jump in the last two questions then. Okay. So first of all, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
So for me, the most strangest job was a makeup artist at Glamour Shots.
Okay. I've got to hear more about this. This sounds amazing.
Oh, it was awful. So it was during that time that we were at Fort Hood, and I told you like there was just no good jobs around. So this is what I ended up doing because it was available and I thought I could leverage my skills to do it. But it's like, I rarely ever wear makeup. So it's kind of like not really in line with who I am. But it did teach me a lot of valuable lessons about working with people. The Glamour Shots I worked at was the top Glamour Shots in the country. And it's probably because there were all these military wives.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
But there was this really high standard of like, you had to sell everybody on a $400 package. And even if I wasn't a salesperson, the sale starts in the makeup chair. And like, they made sure to drill that into me. So it was the makeup was kind of like this tripwire for what the sales funnel that they were going to go down, you know, the whole time. So that was kind of interesting for me. And I really learned, I think, there how to talk to people, because I would like talk to these people and find out like what they did for a living and kind of the things that they valued in order to understand kind of why they were there and what they were hoping to get out of it. And, you know, in my job, I was supposed to use that information to kind of sell them whatever we had to sell them. But now I see that, you know, there's value in understanding what people need and then giving them what they're asking for, not just selling them some random thing. So.
Yeah, it's amazing how God uses all those even random jobs for, you know, building you up in the future, right?
Yeah, those weird jobs that I would never put on my resume, but
but they're skills, right? That come in handy. Yes. Ah, that's so cool. Glamour Shots makeup artist. I love it. Okay. So finally, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring God's kingdom more into their vocation?
I would say, you know, Cynthia Bourgeau talks about the gospel being the story of recognition and recognizing Jesus. And so I would say that in your own work and what you do, find ways to recognize Jesus in the people you're working with, even if they're not believers, and in the things that you're doing, and recognizing that spirit that we were talking about that's really all around you all the time, whether you recognize it or not, but really working on that recognition.
That's great. I love that. That's good stuff. Well, thanks so much, Shay. I can't say thanks enough. This was so much fun. And nerding out about design is always a good thing. So.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks. Well, I hope you enjoyed this interview with Shay. I think just hearing about the ins and outs of graphic and web design is just fascinating to me. I really enjoyed hearing about it. I hope you did too. For all you freelancers out there, that is like solid gold from somebody who has actually walked that out. So I hope you really enjoyed all that stuff. If you have people out there, if you have professions that you're like, listen, I would love to hear somebody who does such and such a profession, does whatever, let me know. I'd love to hear about that. I will find them. I will chase them down and I will get your interviews. So let me know. And as always, go ahead and give me a share and go ahead and give me an iTunes rating interview. I would greatly appreciate it. And until next time, get out there and hustle.